listening to Casual Swim.
Cities that claim to have the crown of electronic music, London, I guess, had its day or is having its day. Do you think there's any city particular around the world that kind of leads in the forefront of electronica?
I think that right now, though there has been like some things, some moving and shaking that's happened with venues in London, I think just the access to the different kind of spaces here means that London's kind of got it right now, because obviously, you know, Berlin is bristling with activity and there's like so many things to do all the time. It can be a little, you know, dance music. Mm. And obviously like a very cool side of like left field electronica, but I feel like I always enjoy how well-rounded the cultural scene in London feels. I feel like friends are always telling me about going to jazz nights, going to hip hop shows, like going to like a techno thing, going to a rock band thing. And so I think just by sheer health of the ecosystem, London's kind of got it right now.
Congrats on Dawn Chorus. Can you tell us like how that album came about?
I made my first full-length album 3 years ago, 2 years ago. It came out 2 years ago, but I made it 3 years ago. After that, I wanted to kind of just do like a couple EPs, just kind of make some music and like not overthink it. And you know, you always hear about the sophomore slump, like kind of getting too in your head about a second record. And I wanted to kind of maybe just attack that without thinking about it too much. Like just kind of, if I just go and make music and I don't think about like, oh my God, like I'll never be able to make a second album, I'll be able to just make it. And so I took some time aside and over the course of like 5 or 6 months.
Service, Saturday Mass, night service. flashing. The DJ played the rapture. Saw the lights reflected rays. She was dressed like Chloe Sevigny. Met her on the seventh day of tour. It was going awful. On the road with 12 apostles. Out there trying to spread the gospel. Started missing daylight. Knew I had to stop raving. Woke up, came back to life. Got reincarnated. At night service. Saturday Mass. Night service. Saturday Mass. All the nights with stained glass. In the future, see the past. Night service. Saturday Mass.
Process like did you like I don't know rent like a beach house or like a, I don't know like a cabin out in the woods in Canada and just smash it? Well, actually you did it at Hudson's
right? So yeah. A lot of it started at my house. I have like a studio in my basement. My apartment's kind of got a little like basement spot, and so I would kind of start a lot of demos there, but Canadian winters are terrible, and Hudson Mohawk is an old friend of mine who lives in Los Angeles now, which is not as bad a winter. And so he just moved studios, but the space that I was working at was a beautiful spot where he had a main room, but there was a B room, like for a little producer suite.
A little brother room.
A little brother room, exactly. And so I would kind of go over there for a couple weeks at a time, get like a nearby apartment, like either stay with a friend or whatever, and just like literally just lock myself in there, like ordering food and just like 14 hours a day, just kind of make beats. And like in the next room, Hudson and Lunas were making the new Tonight record. So it's kind of this fun, like,
that's crazy.
Little kind of like brother treehouse kind of vibe in there. That was like really fun. You'd kind of like hear what someone else was working on if you went to get a coffee in the kitchen and be like, hey, that sounds great, man. Like, come on in and hear it. And we'd play each other a lot of music as we were writing. Yeah.
So was there a feedback loop?
Because yeah, totally.
Yeah. Those two albums like got rave reviews.
Yeah.
So I guess the creative process traditionally is like, you know, you do your thing, but this sounds like quite a unique creative process.
Yeah, and not that, like, I don't think that much of my album is totally, like, influenced by Tonight in a direct way, but definitely, like, knowing that Ross as a Mohawk could just kind of walk in and be like, hey, what are you working on? Definitely makes you want to kind of, like, play him good shit. So you'd kind of, like, just come in, and you're playing him something, and then you kind of walk over there, and you listen to what they're working on, and you're just like, holy shit, this is crazy. And so, yeah, I think there's, like, a good... It's not even competitive. It's more just like this nurturing, like, oh man, that sounds great. Like, da 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 da. How'd you make that sound? And kind of like.
Well, because it's all like, lucky me, right?
Exactly. It's all, it all feels like family.
Yeah.
to the next point. I think, like, review culture. So Pitchfork gave you an amazing 7.7.
my classic comfort zone on Pitchfork.
Yeah, well...
The mid-sevens.
That's what we got from your last one, right?
Exactly. I think it was exactly the same, yeah.
But do you think... What do you think about review culture?
I mean, it's fine. Like, I'm
you're
very
lucky
appreci-
to be on the positive side of that, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm very appreciative that people who listen to music for a living think that it's worth it to listen to mine. So, like, that's great. I think there's this tricky thing now with this current world of music digestion where fewer and fewer just average music fans, like, who are friends of mine, I know, will, like, read reviews. It seems like reviews exist almost mostly for, like, music industry insiders, I find. Mm-hmm. Like, the review exists for festival bookers and other people in the scene to be like, oh, you got a decent Pitchfork score. And there's kind of... It feels more like inside baseball now. But I do think... I tend to like... I'm on the side of, like, I hope that we can always have people who... like, stand on the sidelines and care enough to, like, critically think about what is going
but,
on.
The counter to that is, like, I remember I was speaking to Spank Rock back in the day, and he got a really...
One of my heroes.
He got a really... Yes, likewise, and he got a really negative review, and it kind of fucked that album, you know? Like,
I mean, dude, it fucking hurts. I mean, the worst is... Honestly, the worst is when you get no review. Like, Resident Advisor didn't even run a review for my first album, Feel Infinite, and that was, like... It was like a shot in the chest because it was like, oh, it's not even that you don't like it, it's just you don't think it matters kind of thing is how I perceived that, and it was like really hard to take. Mm. And so,
but do you think
they hold a lot of power, you know?
Yeah, that's do you think they have too much power?
I think not at all, not anymore. Yeah, okay. I think the relationship between musician and journalist in 2020 is weird because a lot of musicians want to like take pot shots at the press on social media or whatever, but like journalists are just like freelance fans like trying to scrape a living at this point, so it's like it feels kind of silly to like it feels like punching down when artists are like condescending towards journalists, whereas I think maybe 10 years ago when Pitchfork really controlled a make or break in a career, Resident Advisor really did, I think that if a reviewer would like purposefully give a snarky bad review to an artist, that was punching down at the artist. Like, that was a very terrible thing to do. Mm. I think now the playing field is a little more even, and I think I welcome any and all enthusiastic discussion of music, honestly, because otherwise, what do we have? We just have, like, a new track on Spotify. Like, it's so hard to feel like anything matters if we lose that.
So, on your remix album, you've got the likes of Fort Romeo and Lunas himself.
Yes.
How did that process go about? Did you reach out to them, or did they kind of come to you, or like...
It was a little bit of everything. Mostly, I reached out to people. A lot of the writing on this record was more collaborative than I've had before. Like, I would bring in someone in the studio, like, machine drum for a day and kind of make music with them, and
I don't want.
and so on. And I really enjoyed getting other perspectives on kind of what I was working on. And so it kind of felt like a natural, like an natural extension to kind of try to reach out to, because mostly pretty much everyone on that list are like friends of mine and people that I know. So like, I kind of like extend that and be like, what is your take on this? But the Four Remote one actually was, I sent him Night Service like pretty early on and he was playing it out in DJ sets. But at some point he's like, I'm working on this edit of what you sent me, but I wish I had more parts. Like, could you send me the stem? So he just did that on his own.
Okay, right.
But Mike's a good friend, and I'm so happy with the version he made. So,
what do you think about his latest collaboration with Chris Bell from Vampire Weekend? Have you heard that?
I haven't heard that.
Okay.
Wait, so that's more recent than the stuff with Simeon that he put out?
So this was like late last year. It was it's him from.
Oh my god! I haven't caught that.
It's got one track which I really like. But nice. It's interesting. It's super good.
Mike is unbelievable, man. He's
so he's English,
one of my
right?
favorites.
Yep.
And
yep.
he lives in New York?
He lives in Glasgow now.
Okay.
He used to live in Berlin, but he's in Glasgow.
And is he ghostly or lucky me?
He's ghostly.
He's ghostly.
Yeah, that's okay. right.
Amazing. Yeah, that's do those two labels have like an interrelationship, you think? Or
a little bit. I wonder definitely a like-mindedness. I think everyone at Ghostly so nice and personable and has that kind of community sense and that kind of like joking around with everyone that's like part of the sound, and anytime I encounter any of them I feel like a kind of kinship of it. Yeah, yeah. You guys are one of the good ones kind
well,
of
I
thing.
Guess they do kind of weird electronica, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of what you guys do.
For sure, for sure.
depend on you, man.
I think electronic music is such a like forward-thinking genre, but do you ever think, oh, like this music, what it's going to sound like in 10 or 20 years time? Or is it,
honestly, yeah. I try not to. Like sometimes, yes, like in a way that you might, I'll like skirt like a trend or maybe like nod at it or wink at it, but like try not to be totally into like what the best-selling record on Fonica is right now, because obviously that means in 8 months, you just sounded like October 2019. You know, like, I think there's, like, a dance where, like, you want to feel like you're part of a moment and part of a conversation and part of, like, a world, but also if you do kind of pigeon your hole too much and being like, oh, what sounds are people using? Or what is the sound of today? I want to sound like today. You're setting yourself up for not only 5 years sounding bad, like, 8 months later, you'll sound bad. So, yeah, so that's, like, always
a fun balance. How do your ideas, like, manifest for, like, just generally in terms of the creative process? Like, is there a, like, do you go into your studio or go in and like put some drums down or like put some vocals?
It can come from anything. I think a lot of the music, like on the record, was definitely literally just throwing everything in the wall. I think I made like 75 songs for this record, so it's just like, kind of like every day and just kind of like, oh, here's a new weird sound, like, I'll start playing around with this, like, or buy a new guitar pedal. I did a lot of work with, like, kind of guitar pedals and sort of wanting to...
It wasn't the beat-heavy kind of thing? It was just, like...
No, a lot of my stuff starts more from, like, kind of playing around with synth sounds than the rhythm part, for sure, for sure.
Okay, and I guess your release of White Ferrari kind of blew up. Yeah. You released that for free.
Yeah, I had to, it's, you know...
It's a bootleg, right?
Bootleg, yeah. Sorry?
In terms of like digitalization, like that whole process of putting out music for free, I guess it's like skirts back to that
it's,
whole. Like,
it's helped culture and ideas, but it's hurt in a way being able to pay bills with stuff. Like, yeah. You know, there's a reason why I just released an album, but right now I have to go play a bunch of shows, is because like the sales of the album themselves are not
enough.
I can't really buy a new synth for my next record, like, you know, or maybe like I'll get one nice synth. But it's really kind of it's kind of switched the paradigm, obviously, in how we kind of treat all this stuff. But frankly, I'm kind of young enough that I never really knew crazy record sales. You know, like I remember like kind of older heads, like when Another Girl came out, being like, oh, if you released this in 96, you could have sold like 100,000 copies. And like, yeah, but I didn't. So I don't care. It's fine.
Right. Okay. And I guess
I like the internet.
Yeah. I guess we're discussing it before, but lucky me. What's so like unique about them, and why have you rolled with them for so long? Like, I guess there'd be other albums or like, you know, like maybe Ghostly or something that
yeah.
is like a different kind of perspective on electronica, but you've stayed kind of loyal to them.
Yeah.
Is that just because of the kinship that you have with all the other artists?
Yeah, so definitely I think like what I like about Lucky Me is that even though there is kind of like this hip hop kind of centered to the core of the label, and that, and frankly, that's kind of where I come from. I really got into production because I loved like Timbaland and Neptunes, which is what they were also obsessed with. So we all kind of got into it from this kind of same angle. And then even though I was kind of veering more in kind of this dance music direction, obviously, I think that, for instance, what Hudson Mohawk is in comparison to a regular rap producer, I am in comparison to a regular like techno producer. It's like a lot more color. It's a lot more intense. It's a lot more exuberant. It's almost like a caricature of the genre. And so I think that the thing that kind of binds Lucky Me together is that we all have this like sort of irreverent, but still very fan of what we're making. But it just kind of makes sense. And I've developed a great relationship with them. So
good thing.
Why not? Yeah, I feel at home.
They just dollars.
So you were kind of Radiohead approved as well back in yeah
at the very start.
So how, like, what did that do to your career, and like
it was,
how did
it
come about?
They liked that Another Girl song. They asked me to remix a single.
Really?
That's the be all.
Was that, as a, how old were you then? Like,
I guess like 21.
And were you just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, man. I grew up like as a like diehard fan, and like, yeah, I remember them. It was like one of the first remixes I did as well, and
so it's Caribou and you on the way.
Yeah. And they send me like all the studio stems, and I remember to this day like unzipping the file, and then you're just kind of making your way through like a cymbal, and then like Johnny Greenwood's guitar, and then you get to like Tom York's isolated vocal, and you're like, fuck. I think I was on like a train to Manchester at the time, like on tour, and I was just listening to this, and I was like, oh my god, like, yeah, life is full of surprises and great.
Amazing. So kind of last couple questions, but you guys don't really follow any kind of formats in terms of like, yeah, what you do, but is there any principles or any like, if you were to like dissect your music, is there anything that runs through it which you like to keep constant or you think is just like organically part of your music?
I definitely think that like obviously throughout the years, like the kind of Jacques Green sound in and of itself is like very kind of, it's its own world and thing. And like, I think even sometimes like some journalists have been like, he doesn't change enough. And I tend to respond to that by liking that I'm very comfortable in what I enjoy in music. I think like what kind of makes a Jacques Green record is almost this impressionistic take on like the euphoria and the melodrama of kind of like the club environment and dance music, and kind of like trying to push that sometimes a little too far, or kind of like get a little kind of outside color, a little outside the lines of like what makes a good club record.
Do you think about context in terms of like, do you think about how your people or your audiences will listen to your music?
Yeah, all the time, for sure.
So that's in the back of your head, like you'll be thinking like, this is an album you put on it 4 a.m. in the morning when everyone's like,
that's
chilling out and like,
Like to me, my first album was very much like, I wanted it to be not necessarily for the DJs, it's more like you're with your best friends and you're drinking like at the house and you're about to go out, and then you would listen to that album to kind of like get into it. Oh man, dancing's gonna be so much fun later. And definitely to me, Don Chorus was more like a, we just got back from a party and kind of like this more this hazy kind of like like kind of zone. I think about that all the time. Sometimes I think about it in a way that I'm like, I would probably sell more records if this record was easier to like work to or like have a dinner party to. And I'm like, it's a little too intense to like just
psycho
like
music.
Music is very like almost playlistable in that way because it serves its purpose in a total different way. Mm. And sometimes I'm aware enough of the context of when people listen to music and I'm like, I don't know if people are really like sitting down for, you know, to, I don't know, talk or like around the office and putting on, like that might be a little intense, you know, but that's okay.
So last question, it's quite a big one. I asked like lots of artists this, but how do you want your music to be remembered in history? Do you think about that, or is that not even a thing? Like,
I'm definitely not like, I'm more humble than that. But I guess like, well, I have my own favorite records that mean so much to me that are tied to when I was finishing college or when I got my first apartment or a certain summer in my life.
Yeah.
And I've had kids that come up to me at shows and are just like, man, you're the soundtrack to finishing uni, or like, you're the soundtrack to like that first like real girlfriend I had. And like, if I could do that, that's great. Like, just kind of just touch and help someone through a moment, or help them to fondly remember a great summer, or help them through like that. That's like, what more can you ask for, right?
And are you excited for the future? Like, you still got plenty of punch in you, still gonna go hard? Or?
Yeah, man.
You got anything in the works at the moment, or? Touring with this one
right now. I gotta say, in fact, I did have things on the works, and they're all like on the back burner until end of March when this tour is over. But I'm hoping to kind of, obviously, you know, just release an album, so I don't need to kind of like, I don't need to flood the market with that much more Jacques Green music. I would like to do a little more collaborative work. I just scored a short film for someone, and so I'd love to do a bit more of that kind of work. And
amazing, because I think with like Uncut Gem, you know?
Yeah, man, yeah, Dan did a great job with that.
So is that, because I was like, you guys are quite like electronic soundscape artists in the world.
Yeah.
Is that something that, you know, like dabbling outside of album making and like doing.
That is 100% where my head's at. I would love. I'm very envious. I was at the TIFF premiere for Uncut Gems with Dan. And
how did he get that gig?
So he did their last film, Good Time, and they were just big fans of his music, and they grew a great personal relationship, and so he just did the second one as well.
So that's something that you would love to do in the future.
Not in an envious or jealous way, because I'm glad that he did that soundtrack, but I would love for that to happen, for sure. I like put that energy out into the universe. Like, that's good.
Jack Green, thanks for talking to Casual Swim.
Thank you so much for having me.
Peace.